ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And throughout the week on the podcast, I'm joined by the brightest political minds at the ABC to wade through the political spin and bring you the analysis you need to know.
No, I think they are hedging. I just don't think you can draw a conclusion from their hedging. And I think everyone's looking for a conclusion in the hedging.
We go beyond the headlines, digging into the key political stories of the day and making sure we have a little bit of fun along the way.
We're always talking about polls.
Poll. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
For years, we managed to avoid it. The H5 strain of the bird flu virus is now taking hold.
Sadly, we do know that once the H5 bird flu is spreading in wildlife and the natural environment, it is not possible to avoid significant losses, which is what we're starting to see now.
And so much of our wildlife is at risk.
Birds like the emu, cockatoos, galahs, we've got some native parrots as well that are endangered. And then obviously commercial poultry. It just keeps escalating.
Today, epidemiologist Rainer McIntyre, who studied bird flu for almost 30 years, on how the virus could reach poultry and potentially dairy farms with devastating outcomes. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Rainer, let's start by discussing this moment on Sunday the 14th of June when a vet, Tony Howlett, was walking along a beach in southern Western Australia and she comes across a sick bird.
It didn't seem compromised in a respiratory way. It was just skinny and dehydrated.
Now she takes it to a wildlife hospital.
We set it up on the examination bench after we'd put our personal protective gear on to have a look at it. It couldn't stand up.
And well, this is where it all began really, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was a migratory seabird which had come probably from Heard Island, one of the sub-Antarctic islands that are heavily affected by bird flu. You know, the virus had been in Antarctica before that, so we knew it was always a risk. It was going to come through that route from Antarctica. And really, once it reached Heard Island, it was just a matter of time before migratory birds brought it into the mainland.
And just to note, we have had bird flu in Australia before, but not this strain. And it's really worrying, isn't it? Because around the world, it really has had devastating consequences, hasn't it?
It has. You know, we've had multiple outbreaks of H7 type bird flu, which is a different type of bird flu, you know, since the 1970s, but they've got more frequent in recent years. Mm. But those outbreaks were controlled. If the poultry was culled, the outbreak came under control and then it went away. But the H5N1, which is the strain, it's a particular mutation of that bird flu that's arose in 2020 and it's spread around the world. It's actually causing a pandemic in birds. And we haven't seen that sporadic pattern with this virus. It's been just continually escalating. It's never gone away.
Yeah.
And historically, H5N1 has never come into Australia because there's also this imaginary line between Indonesia and Australia called the Wallace Line. And invasive species tend not to cross that line. And so we've been protected because the flyways of the waterfowl don't cross Australia.
Mm.
So the ducks, geese and swans. But now there's a huge number of other birds, including these seabirds that are coming from Antarctica down entirely different routes than what avian flu used to spread through.
Okay, so for a number of years, we did manage to escape this H5N1 strain. And last week, we learned from the Agriculture Minister, Julie Collins, that the virus is now being transmitted between birds locally, so not just migratory birds.
Some local transmission has occurred between a number of greater crested terns that are resident in South Australia.
How significant is that?
Yeah, that's really important because Once we've got infection of birds like the terns, which are present in Australia, they're endemic birds, they have their own flyways to fly around in Australia and spread it within Australia. So we're now amplifying the ways in which this virus can spread within Australia.
And the government has now confirmed that a mass mortality event did occur, that is, dozens of birds were found dead off the coast of South Australia.
A cluster of dead and sick birds found in South Australia is being described by the federal government as the nation's first mass mortality bird flu event. More than 80 birds were found either dead or sick on the state's southeast coast.
Obviously a very concerning development. It is not unexpected and is certainly what we have seen overseas with this type of incursion of the H5.
So what does that tell us in terms of how quickly this is spreading then, Reiner?
It's spreading pretty quickly. I mean, this started in June and it's just escalated ever since. And I believe for every detection, there's probably undetected infected birds as well, because there could be areas of bushland, for example, where there are no humans wandering through to observe anything. It's just telling us the scale is increased and the risk to our native wildlife and to our farming industry is increased.
Yeah, and it's been found in seagulls. What other animals are at threat here?
So in terms of our birds, I think, you know, we've got unique birds like the emu, they're at risk. Our other native birds like cockatoos, galahs, we've got some native parrots as well that are endangered, which would be at risk. And then obviously commercial poultry. In terms of mammals, the marine mammals are at risk. We know that they've been badly affected in other countries. Sea lion colonies across the coast in WA, in South Australia, multiple parts of Australia. You know, we've seen animals like dolphins get infected. And then in terms of our terrestrial mammals, you know, there's species like Tasmanian devils that forage on dead birds. So they have been identified as being at risk. Kangaroos and wallabies also do sometimes forage on dead birds, things like the platypus, and we really don't know whether it will spread through our really unique native wildlife.
The stakes are so high. I mean, when you list the number of animals, what about people? Have there been any cases to date of this strain actually infecting a person?
Not in Australia,
no.
And the risk is fairly low at this time because the virus is still essentially a bird virus. We have different kinds of receptors in our throat that don't easily bind that virus. So the virus is mutating and it is picking up more adaptations to human beings. If that switch of affinity from bird to human occurs in the virus, it's likely to cause a pandemic. But at this stage, it's still a bird virus, and we have seen human cases, mostly in the US, where it's really affected the farms, both poultry and dairy farms. And it's been in people who work on those farms and have close contact either with the cattle or the poultry. And in most of the cases, people have recovered. It hasn't been that severe. Looking at the genomic characteristics of this virus, it's very, very invasive to the nervous system, to the brain and the nerves. In cats, for example, we see a severe neurological syndrome. Cats on farms who are fed the raw milk in the US have developed really severe neurological syndromes and died. Dogs can potentially, can get infected, but don't tend to get as sick.
Reiner, let's consider now how this strain of bird flu might spread from now on. Now, you and your team, you've developed a map that tells a pretty concerning story, particularly about this virus making its way into farms.
So the purpose of the map that we developed, which is on our EpiWatch website, is to predict where the poultry farm outbreaks are likely to occur. So it's specifically predicting poultry farms. And if you go into the map and have a look, you know, you'll see like a heat map, and the dark red areas are the areas where we are predicting we'll see the first poultry outbreaks. And they are really concentrated around Sydney and Melbourne. mm-hmm. and to some extent Tasmania. That's not saying that that's where the poultry farms are. We've used a model that takes into consideration where the seabirds are coming in, where the native birds are, which direction they fly, where do they fly to, the wetlands, climate factors, and a whole lot of other things have gone into the modelling to predict where these poultry farm outbreaks will occur.
Well, Chris Jones from the National Farmers Federation, he points out that farmers really need to be incredibly vigilant at this point.
It's preparedness. It's making sure that your birds are contained. It's making sure that anyone who has the ability to do it, keep their animals, keep their poultry away from open water sources and things like that. But people also have to be vigilant about who's coming and going from their farm.
I mean, this is a really concerning time, Raina, isn't it, for poultry farmers? What do they need to be doing?
For poultry farmers and for all of us, the poultry farms get hit. This is likely to be worse than any of the H7 outbreaks we've had, which were quickly controlled. It's highly pathogenic in poultry, which means that once it gets into your flocks, they're all going to die. And if you don't do something about it, it'll just spread through them really quickly and kill them all. So you have to act. And traditionally, the method of controlling it has been culling or killing the infected birds. And if you don't do that, all the others will get infected. There are poultry vaccines that are available. Historically, they haven't been used because they are partially effective and they tend to mask outbreaks. It's a very, very difficult situation, really. There's no good options.
So, I mean, is there anything other than this vaccine that can be done? What, do you have to keep the birds inside? Or?
Well, the free-range poultry are the biggest risk because they're the ones that are exposed to the elements and that the wild birds can infect. So I believe some of the big poultry producers are already putting coverings over their free-range areas. It's not like you've got to do sophisticated surveillance to detect it. The birds will die.
And, of course, in Australia, a lot of people actually do have backyard chickens too.
Yeah.
They're not immune from this either.
Yeah. And, again, the map, which really the hotspots are really in the metropolitan areas of Sydney and Melbourne. You need to keep your chickens in a coop or something, you know, not let them roam around.
What you're saying is your map shows that it is almost inevitable that this virus will get into poultry farms. That will then obviously have an effect on the chickens that we buy to eat and also, of course, the eggs, and we eat eggs a lot.
Yeah, it's going to have a massive economic impact. I mean, you know, you can't underestimate the economic impact of it. I've been following bird flu since 1997. And when there's shortages, other than the economic impact, it's also got a food security impact. And for some people, it's the most affordable form of protein.
All right. Well, Raina, the government says it's spent $113 million preparing for the arrival of this strain. Julie Collins, she said, well, there's no getting rid of it now. Do you think authorities are doing enough to contain it? Are there any lessons that we could be learning, I suppose, from overseas? Is there more that we should be doing at this point?
I think in terms of the poultry, everyone's pretty aware. The poultry industry has certainly been watching what's happening overseas, and they're doing everything that should be done. One of the things that I think in looking at what happened overseas is compensating farmers that are heavily hit, you know, so that they can survive and continue their business is really important. The big problems arise if it hits the dairy farms because, unlike poultry, cattle don't just all drop dead when they're infected. So dairy farmers are less likely to report if the infection comes in. So there's lots of lessons we can learn from the US, for example, where they just didn't take the action they needed, which actually ended up harming the industry more than protecting it because it allowed it to spread.
All right. So, Raina, how do you see this playing out from here? Are we still in a position to perhaps escape the worst of this, or has that time really passed now and we just have to deal with what's coming?
Overseas, as this virus has kind of marched across the world, it's a completely different pattern from what it had been historically, where it was just sporadic. It would cause an outbreak and then we'd respond to the outbreaks and it would disappear. It has never disappeared, this particular strain of virus. It's just got worse and worse and worse. It just keeps escalating and infecting more and more species of both mammals and birds. And that's the same pattern we can expect to see here.
Rainer McIntyre is an epidemiologist at the University of New South Wales. This episode was produced by Louise Mylan and Ilaria Brophy. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is Sydney Peed. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.